I'm Gab, he's Jules. It's blue skies over West London. We got a packed show because we've got the African Cup of Nations quarterfinals. The transfer window is winding down. Luis Diaz on his way to Liverpool. Exactly, but there's one place to start, which I think has to be Juventus, because it feels like they are the big winners of this January transfer window. And let me take you back to the previous transfer window, Jules, when it was pretty much gloom and doom. In the summer, you know, they'd managed to sign Locatelli with some complicated formula. They knew Cristiano was going to leave either in the summer or at the end of that window or during that window. They were hoping it would go sooner. He left on the last day to go to to go to United. And so then they're scrambling around and they just get your boy Moise Kean. It's one of those loans, obligation to buy in the future. I mean, it was pretty glum. But now all of a sudden, they get Dusan Vlahovic and Denis Zakaria, who, frankly, you know, you're like, oh, Zakaria. But it feels like this is exactly what they needed.
That's right. I mean, the striker, and we don't need to go again on Vlahovic and all the praise.
We've spoken endlessly about him.
He's 21. He's amazing. This is an amazing deal. You've paid a lot for it. You've paid up to 80 million euros, which is a lot of money, and money that we didn't think they had. Let's be honest. I thought Andrea Agnelli kept saying to us, well, we're going to die if there's no Super League. We've got no money left. We're going to die. Somehow they put out of the hat 80 million quid.
We'll get into that more detail later.
But that's perfect. And then I think in midfield, they needed someone like Zakaria with the work rate and the physicality and all the effort. A ball winner, not a baller per se, but a ball winner. So if you've got someone to move the ball and pass the ball and create chances for Vlahovic, then you're onto something very, very special. Because defensively, I mean, if you look, you love doing your spine of the team, right?
Yes.
So if you look, okay, Chesney. Yeah, but Chesney and then, for example, De Ligt and then Zakaria and then Vlahovic on top of everything they have around. If Max Allegri is the right guy for this team, then I think there's something very good there in the making.
I think what's exciting is that they got younger. We'll get to the financial side in a minute. But now, and for me also, they get leverage over Dybala and Morata and their futures and whatever happens to them. Morata could yet leave. We're taping this as the window's still open for a few hours. I don't think he will, but who knows? But, you know, it doesn't feel like they're over a barrel. You make a really good point about the money involved and the commission paid. Juventus, because they're listed on the stock exchange, they have to make everything public. They paid 11.6 million in what they call solidarity payments and auxiliary expenses. I mean, you can work out the solidarity payments, which it's kind of surprised they had to pay them because it's an internal transfer. But regardless, it's still going to be around 10 million that they have spent.
But to Partizan, I think they had to pay money to Partizan as solidarity payments.
I think that might be training compensation, actually. Regardless, though, you know, it's still a big chunk, but you're getting somebody who's 21. I mean, you said he's fantastic. Is he the best under 22 central striker not named Erling? I think is something that's big. We're going to get into that more later, but I wanted to touch upon you talked about, you know, where they're getting the money from.
Yeah,
they moved two players out, Bentancur and Kulusevski. And I think, to me, one huge takeaway about this, and I always say this, about spending money on young players as opposed to older veterans. There's a market for Bentancur and Kulusevski, and there isn't a market for Aaron Ramsey, for example, because these guys are younger. Because these guys are younger and they make less money.
Yeah.
So you can find people you can find people to take them. And I think that's pretty huge. They're 1 point off of Atalanta in Serie A. Atalanta do have a game in hand. I mean, are you willing to go out on a limb and say it's nailed on that they've been top four now?
I mean, Vlahovic has to deliver, right? I don't want to hear about pressure and expectation. You've paid 80 million euros for Dusan Vlahovic. It's for him to take you into top four. It's not as simple as that, and they still will have to create chances for him, which, by the way, we've seen the very average decision in Serie A in terms of ball in the box, chances creating and everything like that. So this will have to improve.
And Federico Chiesa is injured.
And Chiesa is injured. So Allegri will have to find a way of putting Vlahovic in the best situations and context for him to score loads of goals, but he has to deliver now. You don't pay all that money for them then to finish fifth or not move up in the table after you've signed him.
All right, Jules, let's try to imagine what Max Allegri is going to do here, right? We've seen Juve play 4-4-2. We've seen Juve play 4-3-3. I think longer term with Vlahovic, given also that he's played on his own up front with two wingers, when Chiesa returns, but we're basically projecting the next season for that. It makes sense to come up with some kind of 4-3-3.
Yeah, I agree.
In the short term, though, am I right in thinking you would like to see Vlahovic with a strike partner or maybe somebody in behind?
I would love to see Vlahovic and Dybala together, I have to say. I think that it will need a bit of work. Why I would go 4-4-2 to start with is because I think he's just arrived at your club. Put it in the best environment straight away. And by that, I mean, the more you can create for him, the more people you can have around him, the better. Instead of having a very minimalist approach to games offensively, like we've seen even recently against Milan, for example. I know he was away and the pitch was terrible, but still, where Vlahovic is going to have the ball 20 times in a game, not much to use in the box, I think put two wide players, put Dybala with him, and then make sure that he gets a lot of the ball that you play in the opposition's half. You know, do that instead of going 4-3-3, where he will feel a bit isolated maybe up front, and then already he's on the back foot from the get-go in his Juventus career.
When you say two wide players, though, the problem with this Juve team right now is if you're talking two wide players, with Chiesa out and with Kulusevski gone,
it's only Bernardeschi, basically.
You're talking Bernardeschi, Cuadrado, maybe, or otherwise beyond that, you talk about putting Rabiot and McKennie wide, which
I know.
You know, so it's a question of how the pieces fit together.
Exactly. So then my question to you on the back of this is, okay, who's going to create the chances for Vlahovic? How now you approach and say, okay, we've got one of the most lethal strikers in Europe right now because he's so clinical. So we need chances. What do you do? You tell to Cuadrado, hey, when you come back from Colombia, we need you to wipe this ball in all the time for Vlahovic. You know, who's going to create those chances for him?
I think that's a very, very fair question. I think with Zaccaria in there, I think Locatelli will maybe be a little bit more free to invent, to find the balls, to make those runs. I think that's going to be pretty critical, running from deeper positions. Dybala and Morata, you know, we get stuck a lot on positions and patterns of play. I genuinely don't know. I think the upside is Dybala and Morata, I think, are both very, very motivated. And I made the point last night on the FC shows, this is big because this is a big knock-on effect for those two, right? You're not, in some ways, Juventus were kind of over a barrel with Dybala in the sense that Dybala made the claim that, you know, they had reached, or his agent said that, we had reached an agreement before Christmas to extend my contract, and it was going to be 8 million euros net plus 2 million euros, which, if you're keeping track at home, works out to something like 19 million euros a year, which I think is crazy money.
It is.
For a guy who's 28 and who's, you know, had his injury records and his ups and downs. Juventus said, no, let's wait. They were very clever to do so. Now, if I'm Juve, I can go to him and say, hey, Paolo, you know, go ahead and knock around Europe. See if anybody will give you that money. Otherwise, if you want to stay here and make yourself useful, show us that you deserve this, and maybe we can extend your contract without giving you a raise because, frankly, you really probably don't deserve a raise, And then you can play with Vlahovic. So you've got that leverage there. And if they lose him, fine. And you freed up a bunch of money that you can go and spend on somebody else. Morata is an interesting one because Morata's deal, if you recall, when they got him, he was an Atletico Madrid player. He still is an Atletico Madrid player. They agreed a deal where they paid 10 million euros in loan fees for the first year, and then they extended it. So then they agreed to pay another 10 million euros in loan fees for the second year. And then if they want to make the deal permanent in June, they have to go and spend another 35 million. Morata's 29 years old. And there's two ways to look at it. Without Vlahovic, I think there would have been a lot of people internally, including Allegri, who say, well, hang on a minute. We've already spent $20 million on him. That's a sunk cost. And by the way, a $20 million loan fee over 2 years, or even $10 million a year, that's not a normal loan fee. That's no, basically that's a down
before.
Payment,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, that's never been seen before.
And then what probably would have happened is they could have gone to Atletico Madrid. They could have tried to negotiate Atletico down from 35 million because his contract with Atletico expires in 2023. So Atletico would have an incentive to get something back. Also, what are they going to do with him? With, you know, they've got Cunha and Griezmann.
Millions of strikers.
Yeah, yeah. Strikers aren't an issue there. But still, then Juve would have had to extend Morata's contract. Morata is on substantial money as well. Now, they can pick and choose. They can only keep one of the two if they so choose. They can decide which one is best. I think Morata would make a great partner for Vlahovic.
More than Dybala, you think? You don't think they're too similar in a way?
No, I don't think they are similar. Okay. I think Morata's a far more, I don't want to say, I say unselfish in a good way. He's a more aware player.
Yeah.
I mean, Morata's the kind of player who coaches generally love because the only flaw is his finishing. Well, you've got Vlahovic to finish, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Again, if he's fit and he's motivated, you know what? Maybe it makes sense to dump both of them and go get somebody else next summer.
Yeah, maybe.
Who knows?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the point is now, if you're Juve, you kind of have these options. And I'll tell you what else I think you get excited about if you're a Juve fan. After years of seeing this team get older and older and older, and you know all those years with Cristiano when they're like, oh yeah, let's add another old guy, final piece of the puzzle. You know,
experience. It was all about experience.
And at the time, maybe it made sense because you have Cristiano Ronaldo, you have a window of opportunity. But now you look at this, and you know, Vlahovic just turned 22. Moise Kean is 21.
Yeah.
You've got, I think, De Ligt is about the same age.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Locatelli's 24. Even Zakaria is 25.
Yeah.
And, you know, Zakaria, you're getting a guy who you're paying to get him early because the deal is 5 million euros plus up to 3 million euros in bonuses. From Gladbach's perspective, they're not going anywhere. They're not going to qualify for Europe this year. They're not going to get relegated. You'll take 5, possibly 8 now rather than nothing in the summer. But he can do so many things defensively.
He's going to be brilliant for them.
He never scores, but he's so smart.
Yeah,
he's physical. So, you know, you've got a core now. You can, longer term, you've got issues, right? Longer term, you're going to need at least one other central defender, I think. I think you're going to need help at the fullbacks. Alexandro's not getting any younger and so on. But you have that nucleus now that you don't have. And I think there's also maybe a shift in the dressing room as well.
My issue right now is Allegri, to start with. Because before I can understand the, like, I'm coming back here, this is not really the team that I left or the team that I would like have to do with this, okay? So don't start doing my head in about, oh, we're too defensive or with this or we can't defend the lead or we can't come back in a game if we go behind, blah, 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 okay? Now, you've had two players that should change your way of approaching games and playing games, especially Vlahovic. So I don't want to see this anymore. I don't want to see this, oh, let's sit back, let's defend, I'm happy with a 0-0 draw. Not with Vlahovic in your team, and even less with Zakaria in your team now. So I want him to show, okay, this is what we're going to do now, be on the front foot, be this, be that, like we explained before. So I think the pressure on Allegri is quite huge between now and the end of the season, because again, you don't spend 80 million on a player and don't qualify for the Champions League. This is not on. For the rest, I agree with you. I think even 2 weeks ago, no one would have thought they would have had this kind of transfer window, really. And I think I have to say, I feel a bit for Fiorentina and Rocco Commisso because he's getting a lot of the slack from Fiorentina fan about, like, you sold to the arch enemy and the rivals, etc. I think that amount of money for someone who only has 18 months left on his contract is a blessing for anyone. So you would have sold to anyone. I think he would have happily sold to Arsenal or to Spurs. Vlahovic only wanted Juventus. He had to sell to Juventus. But even for Fiorentina, you think that they bought Arthur Cabral, who was very good in Switzerland with Basel.
You hear he has 27 goals this season, halfway through the season.
You pay less for him than Juve have paid in agent commissions for Vlahovic. So I'm not saying that Cabral is the next Vlahovic or can be as good as scored as many. But still, compared to how much you've earned for Vlahovic and how much you paid for someone who's very promising, who a lot of other clubs were looking at, I think he's good for Fiorentina.
I think the Fiorentina fans put out, the ultras, they put out a very harshly worded line,
right?
It was. obviously most of the bile is for Svevlahovic because, you know, on the one hand he says he wanted to stay, on the other hand, you know, they were charging crazy commissions to extend the deal. They're charging crazy commissions to other clubs who were possibly interested. They then peddled the line that, oh no, he only ever wanted to move to Juve. I don't buy that for one minute.
Neither.
He would have gone wherever his agents got the commission,
exactly.
Frankly.
Exactly.
I think maybe where, and it's part of negotiations, but where Fiorentina fans take it to heart is two things. One is obviously it's Juve, and they've been through this with Chiesa, and they went through it with Roberto Baggio in 1990 when there was riots and whatever. Baggio was probably even worse because Baggio clearly never wanted to go to Juve, as he later told us. The thing is, you kind of can't have it both ways. Rocco Commisso came out and certainly gave the impression, no, we're never selling him to Juve. And I think that's the really difficult part. Because it's one thing for somebody to come out and say, look, I'm running a business and so on, right? Mm. But Rocco's a billionaire. And we still have this image of like, well, you're a billionaire. You do whatever you want, right? And, you know, Rocco, you're such a tough guy. So, and people took this on hand. I mean, I think comms-wise, that was probably the mistake they made. You know, and it's a difficult situation to be in. Obviously, most of their anger is directed at Vlahovic. But, yeah, I agree with you. Like, I don't think they're in a bad position. You know,
they
added Ikone. They've got good wingers.
Yeah.
If Cabral can score, you know, I think this is a team that can move forward pretty quickly. And there is more money there for investments.
Exactly.
On the Juve side, how they're paying for this. There's a great thread from my financial hero, Swiss Ramble. You can go check it out on Twitter.
Yeah.
I'll probably retweet it. But basically, as you know, Juve, having made more than 300 million euros in losses the last 2 years, excluding like sort of their non-player trading numbers, I think they haven't made a profit since 2015.
Yeah.
So they're not in a good place that way. And again, I always get this. I have people on Twitter say this. Oh, but Agnelli's so rich, Exor's so rich. I'm like, it doesn't freaking matter. First of all, the company that owns them, Exor, which represents the Agnelli family and other shareholders, they're running a business too. You know, they're not going to bankroll losses endlessly, right? They want to go and break even. They need to grow and break even because financial fair play, despite what we think, is still a thing and will be coming
back,
right?
Yeah.
And they have shareholders. And they're responsible to those shareholders because part of their shares are publicly listed, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's important to bear all this in mind. So the way they're doing it is, obviously, they're saving a ton of money on Cristiano Ronaldo. Between wages and amortization, you know, his wages alone were something in the order of 60 million, 65 million euros, I think, plus the amortization, plus the, what was it, 20 million euros or 50 million euros they got from United. All of that is money that's coming back in. They're getting Bentancourt and Kulusevski's wages off their books, which aren't as high as Kulusevski and Zakaria's, but they're not low either.
Yeah.
And obviously, they're getting in money. You know, I think it's something like 25 million euros for Bentancourt. And it's 10 million euros, I'm told, for Kulusevski's loan fee. So I think these things generally offset each other, more than offset each other, at least for now. On top of that, the raise also did allow something like the capital raise, it allowed something like for close to 80 million to keep the team competitive.
Yeah.
Now, they can't all spend
it. They spent all of that on Vlahovic, right?
Well, no, because they made the savings off of Cristiano and whatever.
Still.
A chunk of that goes on. Also, the other thing, bear in mind, is they still have to physically pay for Chiesa and Locatelli and Moise Kean. These are loans with obligations to buy. So there's going
to
be payables coming due. But, you know, that's how they did it. This is a situation.
It still feels a bit like a miracle compared to what Agnelli was saying at the time of the Super League and all the figures that we've had of like, look, they've got no money. There's no money there. And suddenly, and I understand all you say makes sense and it's the logic and it's there. We can see it. It's not that they've made they've falsified a check or anything. I understand what you're saying. But still, it feels a bit like a miracle because we really thought they can't buy Vlahovic. They don't have that kind of money ready like this available. And somehow they find it great for them. I'm not saying, it's fantastic because they needed that. But it feels a bit like, oh, wow, they put this one out of the
hand. Yeah, I know. But look, if you bring up Agnelli in the Super League, or you can mention Florentino as well. No. At the time, they're all crying and say, oh, we're all screwed. And then,
of course.
Look, Real Madrid are making a profit during COVID. Come on.
No.
You take that for what it's worth. I think it is true that, if Juventus didn't have, if Juventus wasn't Juventus, if they didn't have, you know, wealthy shareholders, then they would have been cash strapped. You know, if it was being run purely as a business without the opportunity to raise capital, you know, then it would be a different story. But do you see them doing anything in the Champions League?
Of course. No, I think now you have to almost revisit what you make of them, what you think of them. I still, you need to wait a little bit. And I think February, they've got some big gaps coming up in the league as well, and see how Vlahovic integrates into this team. Again, I know we keep saying it, but it's true. It will depend a lot on if they can get him scoring straight away, if he's very clinical and scores a lot of goals. Because it has been the problem this season. They haven't been scoring enough, and you can't win the Champions League. I don't think they're strong enough defensively to just win the Champions League purely based on their defensive strength, and then just scoring the odd goal there and there, you know, winning on penalties, blah, blah, blah. So it will depend a lot on that, but they're certainly better armed now for anything, not for the Scudetto, but for anything Champions League-wise, top four finish-wise, than they were before.
I agree. I think in the Champions League with the format, you know, you could see maybe they can get hot, they can go on a run. Obviously, on paper, for me at least, you know, they're not on a level with Manchester City or Bayern or Liverpool.
Collectively, they've been very average all season.
They really have. And, despite the fact that they had a great run, you know, they had good results in the Champions League, which is why they topped the group, and which is why they have, you know, on paper anyway, a favorable draw in the round of 16 with Villarreal. Although, again, many people have looked at Villarreal, have made the mistake of thinking, oh, look, it's just Unai Emery. And then let's tell a tale. But I think the priority, finish top four.
Yeah.
More people to go off the books. They're still hoping, as we tape this, to get rid of Aaron Ramsey. Maybe he'll move on in the summer. But I think if you're Juve, you know, really this is probably the first window since Cristiano Ronaldo where you're kind of smiling from year to year. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough Juve. How about some quick hits?
Let's go, Gab.
Porto's Colombian winger Luis Diaz has joined Liverpool. Ooh. Jules, he's having a monster season. He was a bit up and down in his last few years before Porto.
Yeah, and I even think that we can say this season that he's been a bit inconsistent at times. Okay, the expectations are quite high. But I still think, and I watched him the other day with Colombia, for example, against Peru, and I thought he was disappointing. In the way he played and the way they defended on him and all of that. So there's work to do there. He's only 25. You can still say that he's quite raw in a way. But I think Sadio Mane was quite raw when he moved to Liverpool with Klopp, and look at what Klopp have done with him. So I think there was still some inconsistency with Mane at Southampton, capable of scoring a hat-trick in 10 minutes in the Premier League, but also going through games where he was quite anonymous. Klopp made him into a world-class player, and I really expect Luis Diaz to do the same with Klopp at Liverpool. So listen, it's just us being a little bit picky. He's a wonderful player. He's young. He's the next cycle, the post-Mane and Salah era with Jota at Liverpool. And I think it's a great signing for a decent amount of money. It's still a lot of money, but I think he's decent for someone of his quality.
I think it's a ton of money. I think given the age that he's at, because you have to project that how much you're going to get, I like the signing because it gives him, I think primarily, I agree with you, it is a gamble because he has been inconsistent and you have to put your faith in Klopp that he can add that level. Remember, Jota wasn't really Jota when he arrived at Liverpool either from Wolves. You know, he'd been okay, good at Wolves, but he went to another level.
Yeah.
I think what this really matters is this really gives them leverage over the three forwards, Firmino and especially Sadio Mane and Mo Salah. Mm. You know, you can go out there at some point and you can hardball them. You can say, listen, we think you're this much. We can pay this much. We're not going to go beyond that. And then, you know, kind of call their bluff.
Yeah,
and it doesn't
become
a tragedy if one of them leaves. And that this really, really helped. We talked about this before with Juventus and Dybala Morata. I think this is something that clubs are doing more and more.
Yeah, no, I agree. Gab, Tottenham are especially annoyed about this, though, about the Luis Diaz transfer. According to the Daily Telegraph, they thought they had a deal in place with the player and with Porto, only for Liverpool to come and hijack it, or backdoor it? Is that how I think
you can use the word hijack.
Yeah.
I think backdoor might have different implications. I think there was so much detail in this piece, this Telegraph piece, that you kind of know, like, all right, this is very, very well sourced.
Definitely.
You can imagine where it's coming from. Like, they had an agreement with the club. They had an agreement with the player. But until you put pen to paper, that's the difficulty you run into. And if I'm Porto, there's nothing wrong with me ringing up Liverpool and say, hey, you guys are interested in this? Well, if you can, you know, do this. I think Liverpool basically just changed the terms of the payments.
The structure, yeah.
He gets on the Klopp gets on the FaceTime with Diaz. You see that big the smile? How can you say no to that?
The sound of the FaceTime. And then suddenly you go, Jürgen Klopp with his big...
Imagine, you're greeted by that on one side. On the other side, you're greeted by Antonio Conte. Not quite the same thing.
Maybe.
Jules, it looks like Ousmane Dembele's time at Barcelona is coming to an end one way or another, either today, actually, or in the summer.
Yeah.
But either way, Adama Traore is coming in on loan with an option to buy for 35 million euros. What do we think?
Well, we think that Barcelona is trying really hard to push Ousmane Dembele away. And I think they see PSG as a club that could easily welcome him right today as we record this, or maybe more in the summer. But then in the summer, Barca won't care anymore because he'll be a free agent. So really for Barca, the most important would be to try to offload him now, which I think is going to be difficult. I don't think PSG will take him now. I don't think any other clubs like in the Premier League, Man United or Chelsea will take him now either. So it looks like he's going to be...
You like Traore?
I like Traore and Braithwaite up front. It's like Middlesbrough of like a few years ago. I'm not really convinced by it. I can see why he wanted to go back. He was born literally near the Camp Nou. Grew up there, La Masia, etc. There's a lot of work to do, I think, with him, with Traore, to make him consistent, to make him use all his potential. But he will add a lot of the pace and hunger that Xavi wants.
So. I like the fact that it's a loan with an option, right?
Exactly.
Try before you buy. It doesn't work, you send him back.
Exactly. Back to Spurs, Gab, because Dejan Kulusevski and Rodrigo Bentancur, as we've been mentioning earlier on the show, are on their way from Juventus. How much does this move the needle in terms of what they can achieve this season?
I think this means that they're right up there, I think, alongside United in terms of favorites for top four. It's still an absolute dogfight between Spurs, United, West Ham, and possibly Arsenal could get back into it too. But, you know, the way I see it, look, Kulusevski, we know, wasn't first choice. He's interesting to me because I think he's a wild card. You don't know what he's going to become. He's got such an unusual skill set in the sense that he's tall, he runs, he dribbles, he runs at people.
Is he an impact sub, though? Or you start him? Because you clearly have Son, Lucas Moura, Bergwijn, and now Kulusevski for two positions, really.
You don't have Son players for a while. I think it changes the way you play because he's a wide player who comes inside. Mm. Like, he's very raw, you know. Bentancur, I think, is the one that Conte was 100% on because he needs bodies in the middle of the park.
Yeah.
He needs help.
Yeah.
Tanguy Ndombele is the guy who makes way for Bentancur as he goes back to Lyon on loan. Jules, what beckons for him with our pal Peter Boss?
Well, I don't know. Certainly they have an amazing midfield if you think about all the technical players that they have now with Kakré and Aouar and Paqueta and Ndombele, Fevre as well, who's coming from Brest. I don't know. 3 days ago, no one would have predicted Ndombele to go back to Lyon where he left.
Why do they need so many central midfielders?
I don't know.
Is he playing the 1-8-1 formation?
I don't know, but certainly they can't play them all together. It'd be very, very interesting to say, and they would have to find the right balance. But good luck to Peter Bosch. Loads of talent, but need to find the right formula. Christian Eriksen's deal with Brentford is all done, Gab. We've talked about this a lot, but it's worth reminding ourselves how incredible this story is, really.
That's right. June 12th. He suffered his cardiac arrest. He was on the pitch. There was questions. I mean, he himself said he died for 15 minutes, right? So it's incredible that he's coming back. You hope that all the checks are done. You hope that it's been done safely. I think this is really a human story, more than a football story, but hopefully can become a football story. He's back because he wants to play at the World Cup.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Now, Jules, let's get this horrible story out of the way. Manchester United's Mason Greenwood spent Sunday night in police custody after being arrested on suspicion of rape and assault. There's not much more we can say other than we hope the truth comes to light and justice runs its course.
Yeah, that's right, Gab. Investigation is on course. There's been an audio and video posted on social media by a woman, and United reacted pretty quickly, the police as well, so... Let's see what happens now.
Yeah, United saying he won't be training or playing for them for the foreseeable future.
Exactly. In the Africa Cup of Nations, Gab, meanwhile, Egypt beat Morocco 2-1 in extra time. There were two heroes for Egypt. One is Mo Salah, of course, and the other one is the keeper, Gabalski.
Obviously, I'm going to like the guy called Gabalski more. He made a tremendous save when it was 1-1 at the end of the 90th minute to send the game into extra time. He picked up an injury as well. It's touch and go whether he'll be able to play in the semifinal. I thought Egypt deserved this. I thought they started slowly, but they have the individuals. Salah, I thought, again, you know, you said he's carrying them. I think he got a little more help this time from Marmoush or whatever. But yeah, this is how Egypt roll, right? They look bad at the beginning and you just keep going.
I mean, we talked about the experience before. What could be the key? Morocco, this team, this generation of Moroccan players have never been that far. Salah and his team have been there before, lost the final, you know, lost semifinals, etc., etc. And I think that counted. And also, Carlos Queiroz's substitutions, you have to say, Trezeguet at halftime was really changed the game too.
Big call there. Yeah. Egypt will face the host nation Cameroon, who beat Gambia 2-0 with two goals from your boy Toko Ekambi. Jules, they're getting stronger as the tournament goes on.
Yeah, KTE, Carl Toko Ekambi, Paris born and bred, of course. Fantastic. You're right, they're getting better and better. I think, you know, Gambia, we said it before.
When took
we
a while to break him down.
Yeah, and they were a solid team. But Toko Ekambi has been really good. Him and Abubakar, who missed a few chances because easily that game could have been more than just a 2-0. So it's very promising for Cameroon. At home, of course, let's remind everyone. But I think Egypt is really the first team that they will face that is to a standard that could actually cause them problems. Senegal were a big pre-tournament favourite, Gab. As you know, they started slowly but got past Equatorial Guinea 3-1. They got scared when Yannick equalised in the second half before goals from Kouyaté and Ismaïla Sarr.
Yeah, I mean, Sarr at the end was just kind of the safety goal. It's funny. Senegal keep going on. I'm not sure that they're necessarily getting better, but I think they are kind of coming together when it matters. I think we still saw a lot of the issues that they have, especially against a well-organized defensive team like Equatorial Guinea. But they got a lot of joy from Mane, especially cutting him from the flank. And then eventually Kouyaté made it safe. But speaking of Senegal, they're going to take on Burkina Faso in the other semifinal. Mm. And it was all about Dango Ouattara, who scored and later got sent off.
Yeah.
No more miracles for Wahbi Khazri.
No, although Khazri felt he should have had a penalty in the second half, which I think is probably right. VAR didn't give it or didn't change the referee's view. For Ouattara, it was such a great game, the young Lorient striker. It's a shame about the red card because he will miss out now the semi-final. But Burkina Faso have been there before. Let's not forget, you know, it's a small country. They said that they did it for their people because, as we explained in the last show, there's a coup d'etat which happened last week. So I think that would give a lot of joy to the people of Burkina Faso, which they needed, really. Everton have made their choice, and it's Frank Lampard Jr. I love when you put the junior all the time, Gab.
There are two job, Frank Lampards, let's be
I know,
clear.
Course,
they're both coaches.
Course, senior and junior. His first job will be making sure they don't get sucked back into the relegation zone.
Yeah, I think so. Because if you look at it, it's the gap isn't that big.
No,
it takes a couple. And the team's further down. Burnley spending, Newcastle spending, Watford bringing in a whole bunch of players, Norwich on a roll. So
games in hand, all of them.
It's a, you know... It's a very different challenge, I think, from what he had at Chelsea. They're still trying to make a couple moves in the last hours of the transfer window. I think there's been some revisionism of Lampard and what he did at Chelsea, some negative revisionism in the sense that, you know, Tuchel comes in and they improve. Like I'm a Lampard fan. I've known the guy for many, many years. I think he's very, very bright, and bright people learn from their mistakes, whatever mistakes that were made. Let's not forget, he came in without a transfer window and whatever, did what he did, and he's challenging himself again by taking on a job like Everton. He could easily sit back and be like, nah, I'm going to stick with the media the rest of my life. So,
it's a tough job for him. Yeah, I admire it.
Canada beat the United States men's national team 2-0 to tighten their grip on CONCACAF qualifying. Jules, kudos to Canada and John Herdman. But were you disappointed by the U.S.? They're just 1 point clear of the playoff spot.
Yeah, I have to say, disappointed. I think it helps a lot, Canada, when they scored so early in the game. And that goal by Kyle Larin and Jonathan Davids. The creation of it was really good, and I think it
not
works.
Great defending, though.
Not great defending from the kick by Matt Turner to the whole defend in transition wasn't good. I expected far more from the US. I have to be honest. 1-0 down, you have to go for it. I didn't see enough. They didn't create enough at all, and then they conceded a second goal late. And I think Canada, again, considering the momentum that they were having going into this game. And all of that, the players missing for both teams, really, but especially for the US, it was maybe an issue. I just think that early goal made a huge difference.
So I spoke to somebody who was at the game, and they're playing in Hamilton, Ontario, which is actually probably as far south as you can go in Canada without going into the US, but it's still freezing cold.
Yeah, remember when Mexico.
And it's an artificial pitch. So I get that if you're Canada, you want to do that. A lot of your guys grew up playing in these conditions. But if you're in the U.S., their next game is in Minneapolis. It's also going to be cold and nasty. Why? I don't get that. You're the better football. I know you're doing it to unsettle the opposition, but you know you're the better footballing side.
And now I think there's four games to go in these qualifiers. The U.S. have to be very careful because I think Panama are the one just behind after they win against Jamaica. Salah Azmoun moved to Bayer Leverkusen from Zenit, Gab, in January for €2 million rather than in the summer for free. This is a bit of a coup, right? He was really linked with Lyon, who thought they had him, and then he went to Germany.
Look, I think, you know, this guy was the Iranian Messi, right?
Yeah.
And then, okay, we went off that. He moves to Zenit. But I think he had a good season last year.
Really?
He scored
good.
A ton. I think it was 17 goals, something like that. He gives you something different. And, you know, it's one of those deals where you get him in the summer for nothing, chuck in some money, Zenit says, you know, does Vidania, and he moves now.
Yeah.
Great
signing. He's only like 26 or 27.
I think he's 27 years old. Yeah. I think this isn't going to turn Bayer Leverkusen into Bundesliga contender straight away, but I think it certainly does help. And now that attack looks pretty potent to me.
Yeah, I agree.
Neymar is back in training and running around for Paris Saint-Germain. Jules, he'll be fine for the Champions League, right?
Well, he's certainly hoping so, and there's more and more optimism at the club that he will be fit for February the 15th and the first leg against Real Madrid
in Paris. This is all that Paris Saint-Germain care about.
Clearly it is. Sergio Ramos picked up an injury as well. He's a bit doubtful now for the next few weeks, so it's a bit more touch and go. Have you watched the Neymar documentary yet or not?
I still have not watched the Neymar documentary.
Tell me if you like my tie. Tell me if you like my tie.
Woo! Seriously, like I've heard there's like 15 minutes that are really good, and then
I don't know, but I mean it a lot apparently. Well, I think a couple of times, or maybe more. So
you haven't seen it either.
No, I haven't seen it yet, but people keep sending me photos of me in it. So I'm like, hey.
So there's a lot of jewels in there.
Well, at least twice already. If there's more, please send them over because I haven't watched it yet. This was way back on Friday, Gab, but Ecuador-Brazil finished 1-1 and will be remembered for the possible decapitation of Mateus Cunha and all the red cards.
Yeah, there's a bunch of red cards in the game, red cards that got rescinded, like the one for Alisson. And, of course, Emerson Royal also getting sent off.
But
this was early on. The goalkeeper, Dominguez, from Ecuador, comes
crazy.
Out. I mean, talk about some Jackie Chan karate kid to kick to Cunha's face. It was really nasty. I don't think he's evil or whatever. You apologize for it, but you're putting yourself in a horrible situation when you do that. That was dangerous. That's not something I think anybody wants to see outside of MMA. Jules, a few years ago, Jean-Kevin Augustin was a rising star at Paris Saint-Germain, made nearly 100 appearances for them. Now he's struggling at Nantes, and his contract is up in the summer. And he's the subject of this weird 20 million euro dispute between Leipzig and Leeds United that FIFA have ruled on it. Now it's ended all the way to the Court of Arbitration for Sport.
Yeah, it's a really strange story because he left PSG to go to Leipzig for almost 20 million euros at the time. Didn't really work out for him. Then went on loan to Monaco, then came back. Then was loaned in January 2020 to Leeds United to finish the second half of the season there. COVID happened.
And Leeds had an obligation if they went up.
They were in the championship.
Yeah, it was a loan.
It was a loan with an obligation to buy in case they were getting promoted to the Premier League. The problem is, one, he didn't play, he had injuries, there was COVID. But more importantly, the season ended after the end of his loan, which finished on June the 30th. So Leeds technically got promoted after his contract ended with them. So they're saying, hang on, when we were promoted, he was not with us anymore, so we're not going to pay you that obligation to buy.
Right.
Leipzig said, hang on.
If it wasn't for COVID, you would have been there.
Exactly. So let's see what happens. But yeah, it could be setting a precedent for sure.
He's had so many injuries, and he's had so many difficulties. You feel bad for him. For me, viewed from the outside, based on what we know, this does seem like a technicality. Leeds, though, pointing out that they've had other technicalities where they were stung by that three-month thing, including the fact, you know, the Jack Harrison deal with City. So. We'll see what Cass comes up with.
Yeah. This time last year, Manchester United were signing Amad Diallo from Atalanta for 21 million euros, rising to 41 million with bonuses. Now he's off to Rangers on loan, scored on his debut. Gab, the jury's still out on him?
I think so. He's very, very young. By the way, they also signed, remember, Facundo Pellistri? He's on loan at Alaves now.
Started for Uruguay the other day.
It's like his own story is obviously very unique. We've covered it before. He hardly got any playing time. It makes sense that he goes somewhere and play regularly and obviously scored on his debut. The one thing, I'm not 100% sure Rangers is necessarily the best place for him because on the upside, you know, full stadium, big crowd, a lot of pressure because it's Rangers. On the other hand, if you want to get somebody ready for Old Trafford, then, you know, Rangers in that sense in terms of the crowds and the attention is like a mini Old Trafford. So, so why not? Oh, one of our favorite guys out there, well, your favorite, your version of Bastos.
Yes.
Weghorst has left Wolfsburg. He's now at Burnley, where he replaces, of course, Chris Woods. And Weghorst himself will be replaced by Copenhagen's Jonas Vindt.
Exactly, Jonas
Vindt. What do you make of these musical chairs?
I'm loving it.
Big strikers.
Yeah. So I think Wood is 6'2", 6'3", maybe.
Right.
So they managed to sign someone bigger than him because I think Wood Weghorst is 6'6", or something like that, which is crazy. Let's see. Not the best of season. So, I mean, he scored 6 goals in the Bundesliga in the first half of the season, but compared to the 20 that he scored last season where he was really on fire, specialist, obviously, in the air, when those one-touch finishes and all of that. I think he's great. I just can't wait to see him. And again, I hope that Burnley plays on his strength, which then you get, that's how you get the best of it.
That's what Burnley tend to do.
Yeah, exactly. Newcastle fans really thought, Gab, that they got rid of Mike Ashley. And guess what? He's back somehow, suing Amanda Staveley and her husband.
Yeah, I don't know if it's quite a lawsuit or if it's just he's taking action or threatening one. This is down to the fact that when Amanda Staveley and her husband, Mirdad Gudusi, they owned 10% of the club. They bought the club together with the Saudi investors, and they effectively borrowed money from Ashley to pay for the club. Then since then, she's come out and you know, she said, no, we have lots of money. I'm going to buy Audrey Hepburn's collection, and I sold a hotel in New York or LA or wherever it was. And so now Ashley's kind of saying, why are you borrowing money from me then? I don't think this is going to affect Newcastle directly on the pitch. But Mike Ashley can be a very, very tough cookie, very uncompromising, as Newcastle fans know. And obviously, depending which way this goes, this can be a stress on Amanda Staveley and Mirdad Gudusi, who, let's not forget, are the ones running Newcastle right now. Ivan Toney, the Brentford striker, the big man, he was on holiday in the Gulf in Dubai, and Josie got himself into some trouble.
Well, yeah, because as you know, it's a bit of a winter break now for Premier League players. No Premier League games this weekend. Obviously, there's the FA Cup next weekend as well. So players have been, have had a few days off to go whatever they wanted. Sometimes it's a warm training camp as well for some teams. And Ivan Toney was at a party, clearly, somewhere very hot and very sunny, with a girl who... how can I put it? You know, use the F word to say, hey, F Brentford, to what Ivan Toney, to the surprise, I think, of many, responded in the same way, which then he had to apologize, obviously, because the video leaked.
You said the video was edited, though.
Yeah, it didn't look, the one I saw didn't look like there was any edit at all, for sure. And the fact that he had to apologize and apologized himself shows that clearly he knew that he did
something
wrong.
What are you, some kind of forensic video expert that you can tell it's not edited?
Unless it's done by our producer, Freddie. The rest is too amateurish. Yeah, you know it's happening. Brian Hill, the Spanish winger who went to Tottenham last summer from Sevilla, didn't really last long in London because he's off now on loan to Valencia, back in Spain.
Brian Hill, I find really, really interesting because he was one of the most hyped teenagers, I think.
Yeah, with Eibar, he was fantastic last season.
He was at Eibar, obviously. He was there on loan.
Yeah.
He was from Seville. Seville wanted him to kind of grow. He ends up moving in the summer to Spurs for $25 million. Plus Eric Lamela, who Eric Lamela's contract was, I think, had a year to run. So, you know, it was a bit of a throw-in. But still a lot of money to pay for a teenager. He hasn't started a single game under Antonio Conte or Nuno Espirito Santo. 9 appearances off the bench. You know, you see him, he still looks physically very, very young.
Very skinny,
I think there's a player there. You know, years of scouts can't be wrong. So I think a loan could certainly help him develop from a Spurs perspective. I think the optics of it, you know, we touched upon Fabio Paratici. You were a bit suspicious, perhaps, of some of his moves.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of when you look back to what happened over the summer, you know, he'll obviously come and gone for now anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's a long burn.
Yeah.
Emerson has not quite panned out the way we expected. Golini looks good between the sticks, but he never plays.
Yeah.
And Cristian Romero, you know, he got sent off in the conference, I think. He's only played 6 Premier League games, started 6 Premier League games. He's been announced. We spent a lot of money on him.
Yeah.
So I think the screws are turned a little bit on Paratici for these two other signings to work out, because the other ones in the summer really haven't taken Spurs forward. We got to see pictures of Cristiano Ronaldo Jr., Cristianinho, training with his shirtless dad on Instagram, and social media went wild.
Oh, that was really cute. And, you know, Cristiano said the present and the future, of course. His son is 13, I think, or 12 or 13, his oldest one. And then Cristiano had the, how do you call it in English, the chronometre, you know,
his stopwatch.
Yeah, stopwatch, I think, probably to do the drills and everything. I was a bit surprised, not that, because my oldest plays with the same boots, but Cristianinho was wearing Adidas Predators football boots. When you know the Ronaldo family is very much tied up with Nike, and Cristiano plays with Nike and everything. But clearly he must feel more comfortable with Predators, which is a really good choice too.
He's his own man.
He's his own man. But yeah, we just can't wait to see in a few years how good he really is, to be fair. It won't happen because they got knocked out. But Gab, how weird is this story about Equatorial Guinea's vice president, Teddy Nguema, goalkeeper Jesus Owono, and Michael Jackson's glove?
It's really bizarre. So Teddy Nguema, who I was not familiar with, but for those who don't know, is a very wealthy man. He's the vice president of Equatorial Guinea. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Jesus Owono has been a star, really, for Equatorial Guinea throughout this tournament.
Fantastic.
He said that if they win the tournament, I will give you one of Michael Jackson's gloves out of my collection of Michael Jackson gloves and Michael Jackson memorabilia. I said it was so weird because he tweets this out. I have no idea if Owono is a Michael Jackson fan. Like, okay, so here's a glove belonging to the late Michael Jackson. Gee, you know, thanks, Teddy. I don't know.
I almost wish that they had worn it just to see that happening.
Just to see what he does with the glove?
Yeah.
I know that the guy would be offended if he puts it on eBay. I don't know. Man, like, maybe he is a Michael Jackson fan.
Maybe.
We don't know.
Maybe.
Anyway, Jules, we got to come back on Thursday because that point, the transfer window will be shut, and we'll be drawing our conclusions. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.
Real quick, what's the easiest choice you can make? Window seat over middle? Taco Tuesday over salad? What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjewels, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjewels now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/gabjewels.